Good evening. This is Thomas Steininger. I welcome you to the first edition of Radio Evolve International, our global webcast for consciousness and culture. And our first guest is Bence Ganti from Hungary. Bence, are you here?
Hello, I'm here and I welcome everybody.
Bence, thank you. Thank you to be our first guest on our international edition of Radio Evolve. Radio Evolve is already on air since 9 years, but only in German language. So this is the first international and global edition of this radio webcast. And we do this together with One World in Dialogue. So everyone who heard about One World in Dialogue, about this radio webcast, I'm happy to have you here as a listener, and I'm very glad to have Bence Ganti here as one who is himself a global integral activist, if I may say so. Bence, you are born in Hungary. You founded the Integral Academy in Hungary. And for the last years, you also organized the European Integral Conference. It started in Budapest. The last two ones are at the beautiful Hungarian Lake Balaton. And you are also, you developed your own program, a body flow and V-space program that you basically have seminars with all over the world. Is this true?
Yes, it is true. And first of all, let me thank you for your invitation. It's an honor to be your first guest in this global Radio Evolve. And yes, it's true.
So, Bence, there are many things that we could talk about with you about integral consciousness, integral movement, about your conference, about your academy in Hungary. We thought to focus on your integral flow experience, which mm-hmm. is a kind of a V-space work with a very body-oriented form of it. And both of us are interested in new forms of V-space work. Mm-hmm. And you are also, like myself, very much interested to think about V-space in different stages of consciousness.
True.
So I would like to start with the question, what is your work about and how is it related to new forms of V-space?
Yes. So my work is based on developmental thinking. That's why it's integral. It's integral in the sense that I acknowledge that there are stages or levels of consciousness. And when I work with people, may it be one-on-ones or group work, I look through those lenses. And whether you take the Wilberian stages or you take spiral stages or Laloux stages, which is actually Wilber's stages, or other developmental models, Susan Kugreuter, Torbert, there everybody's talking about a higher stage than normal. Mm-hmm. And this is actually not so new. In the integral world and in the associated fields, the buzzword we space is new, but actually working with groups and having a developmental perspective is not so new. I started this approach when I was 10 years old, actually. Mm-hmm. My father was a mystic philosopher, and he was talking about stages. And his stages were very abstract, not so much psychotherapeutic than esoteric. But that triggered my attention towards stage thing. Is there really stages in life and development of consciousness? As a 10-year-old, I was curious, how will I be when I will be 20 and 30? Mm-hmm. and 40, etc. So when I got admitted to study psychology in the university when I did my master's, then developmental psychology was my favorite. And then that naturally resulted to find Ken Wilber and be very happy about to have a comprehensive, you know, meta theory of the stage theories. So actually for me, it was not just reading one Ken Wilber book, but it's a long story. And what I want to point to that any stage you take that was developed after the 70s, you find at least one stage above normal. And usually normal is defined in development as the rational, Western, liberated, democratic mindset. and behavior and self-sense and human relationship. Because in one attitude, in the normal, rational, modernist attitude, there is a certain kind of behavior pattern and a certain kind of relational pattern and a certain kind of self-sense, etc., etc. So each model after the 70s talks about at least one next stage. Some talk about two or three or four next stage, post-normal stages, mm-hmm. post-conventional stages. And from that comes the the postmodern, and postmodern comes the post-postmodern, and talk in integral circles. So naturally, my attention as a youngster, having my master's degree, I wasn't that much interested in helping people stuck in the lower stages climb up to the middle, normal, rational, but helping the normal, rational to climb up to post-conventional, post-post-conventional. In very simplistic terms, I was interested in self-development and enlightenment. And that stick with me, so I'm still working in that field. The primary goal of my group works, and the conference and the Integral Academy too, by the way, is to transform people from the ordinary to the non-ordinary. This sounds like a big claim, actually, but 20 years of work and also many years of going to therapy myself and having different trainings, get trained in schools, you know, created a calm, peaceful, and balanced approach that I have. So I don't want people to hurry up, to push. Mm. Lower stages can be as beautiful as higher stages. So it's a beautiful work.
If I may slow you down, because
okay,
maybe not everyone is aware of different stages of consciousness, or maybe people have different understanding of what we're talking about by different stages of consciousness. Can you explain a stage of consciousness? If we use kind of as much as possibly day-to-day language, what are we talking about?
Well, to put it very simply, day-to-day language, the first half of the developmental ladders or steps are from birth to growing up to become an adult. And even as a normal person without any psychological study, you might know that a two-year-old behaves differently than a six-year-old, and that's different than a teenager, and the teenager is different than a 20-plus, and a 20-plus is different than a 42, and a 42 is different than a 75. So just common sense shows you that there are different ways of perceiving, relating, interests, drives, etc. Now, in psychology, it's nailed down very precisely through 100 years history of psychology, development of psychology, through research and experiments, detected stages, you know, and famous psychologists like Piaget, Kohlberg, etc., you know, Erickson, describe it. So imagine that the first half of the staircase of the steps is this. But what is so exciting in this, that you as an adult, you carry the inner 1-year-old, you carry the inner 3-year-old, you have at least inner child. And because if you want to hug your girlfriend, or you want to get a hug from your boyfriend, and you want to relax into that hug, and you want to feel oneness, you know, in hugging, and your mind calms down, that might be a level 2 early development experience, and we all need that. So it's we have through the anymore have it. It's not even that if you have it, you are a regressed, broken person, but how I see after so many years that all of these early stages and middle stages are like layers, are all always online, always online. Question: if they are healthy or unhealthy. Do you function well in a certain stage, or you function in an ill way? Yeah. And so this is the first half of the story. And what comes after conventional, normal, everyday life, the post-conventional stages and the spiritual stages, extraordinary. That's when you grow beyond the rational separated self sense and grow into a unity of consciousness, into a consciousness that feels deeply connected with others and the universe, the great web of life, start to feel that your life and how mysteriously guided. There are synchronicities, there's telepathy coming online. And if you further subtle your perception and consciousness and meditation, you might see spiritual light, you might see different spiritual beings. And yes, there is an actual real experience that is called enlightenment. So there is a great ecstatic awakening experience. Mm-hmm. So actually the human experience is a vast field from being a newborn to being a fully enlightened siddha, you know, or yogi, somewhere in the middle of the normal rational mind. And that's the spectrum that that we are working with, and there are pretty clearly defined, you know, steps and stages in this universal path.
Yeah. So how does your work, your integral flow work, relate to these stages of consciousness? How do you describe your work? What are you doing there? And how is this a V-space work that is interested in opening up higher stages of consciousness?
Yes. So higher and lower stages of consciousness, actually.
So okay. Yes.
What I noticed that if you open consciousness, if you open up, then you open up and down at the same time. Mm-hmm. Or potentially, if I open your mind, if I open heart and consciousness to different exercises, anything can come out. A lower stage experience, higher stage experience. It's not so rigid as a model would suggest that, okay, we are targeting now X higher stage. No. If you open people, anything can come out. So we better create, first of all, an integral map that will understand all kinds of phenomena. Second, we create a space, a group practice space, where all of these states can be handled. So you legally can be in a spiritual state in the room, and you legally can be in a regress state, and you can legally, you know, shout and beat the pillow or lay down on the ground and feel like a 1 year old and staying there for half day, you know. And the other one can meditate and have any experience, basically. And my job as the facilitator, like I see and call myself a facilitator rather than a therapist, though I have a clinical therapy degree, etc. But this function is more like facilitating the process that wants to come out anyway. Because the process drives the inner experience of people, have their intelligence within it. So it's actually not me or any external, you know, position exposing something on them where to go. We are rather simply give exercises that open up people, and then observe carefully what's happening, and then facilitate what needs to come out and what needs to open up and being worked through. And within this toolkit, I carry different modalities. I carry constellation work, somatic body work, psychodrama, gestalt. I did even, you know, breath work and deeper altered state group facilitation. So I use verbal instructions. I use music. I use sometimes drumming. I have a shamanic drum. And first, it seems that what is the technique? What is the school? What is the direction that you're coming from? But after many years, it's actually all one, you know, pool of toolkits. And the most important thing, not to repeat a certain tool all the time, but to see where people are and basically pull out from your toolkit the one that fits to the moment. So that's an important element of the flow.
I would like to inquire a little bit how your work relates to the development of consciousness from a certain perspective that I would like to describe to you. Because one way that I really find interesting to think about our development of consciousness is also to think about how we developed as a species from our tribal past, from our mythological past of the great traditions, from early enlightenment, from the development of the Western enlightenment, from the pluralistic time that we are living in right now, where pluralistic perspectives and a kind of an egalitarian attitude with this is part of a postmodern consciousness, and also attempts to go beyond that or integrate these different stages of consciousness that one could call integral consciousness and often is called an integral consciousness. What I find very interesting is when we take as our, let's call it normal consciousness, we usually see our normal consciousness with a very high developed eye sense. And with normal consciousness, I'm mostly talking about the normal consciousness in developed Western industrialized countries like Europe, like in US, where people are more than ever very aware of their individuality, of their eye sense, even to a degree that one could say that a big shadow side of this development is there's a huge narcissistic tendency in our society. One definitely could say this as one analysis of where we are at this point. And then we look that we are living in different cultures all over the globe. And that's part of the reason why I really love to do this broadcast also now on a global scale, because I hope really to bring in the discussion about consciousness, not just from a European perspective, not just from an American perspective, but really have Indian, have Chinese, have African, have Indonesian, whatever perspectives in that, and see how can we communicate? How can we find a shared understanding of where we are and where we go as a humanity?
Yes.
And when you look at that and when you see that our understanding of ourselves has a strong eye sense, has a strong focus point on rationality, has what someone could call a Descartesian, from Descartes, the French philosopher of the 17th century, developed a separation between my eye sense in my consciousness and my bodily existence. There's a separation between body and mind that is very prominent in our culture. And there are many attempts right now to, let's say, be aware that this is not only progress, although I would like to emphasize it is also progress, because some people say that our rationality and our individuality are some kind of alienation. Maybe that's also true, but it's only half of the truth.
Yes.
So in that sense, or part of where we are is that we are living in a very secular culture. Their connection to an experience of unity, in which way ever you want to define this, can be kind of in a traditional spiritual sense, can be in a postmodern spiritual sense, can be even in an indigenous sense. Any kind of this that there is a unity of something that holds us together seems to be very far away of our understanding of ourselves. In that sense, people do spiritual practice, psychotherapy, group process, all kind of stuff, in order also to find something that is beyond this separation. Part of what is happening is also that we're looking kind of back and looking in our mythological past, in our magical past, and find solution there. And I think there are good things in that, but it's also important to see that there's a dignity in modernity, there's a dignity in our rationality that we really have to honor. And my understanding of an integral consciousness is a consciousness that is able to hold all of that. Mm-hmm. But in this, all of that is capable also to find that even in our individuality, we are not really separate being. There's something very profound to understand that even our understanding as separate individuals is a collective experience. Mm-hmm. It's not just that I feel it, you feel it. It's really a collective cultural experience that developed not only but mostly in the European Enlightenment context to a certain degree. And in that sense, I am very interested in finding practices that kind of go beyond the separation, mm-hmm. but at the same time honor that we cannot go back.
Yes.
Would you agree with that? And how would you say, does your work relate to this?
I agree totally with this. And exactly, when I say that my job or our job is to open people, I precisely mean that we want to open people up or widen out from the constructed, rational, individualistic, alienated, but free self. Mm-hmm. I agree with you that modernity has a dignity in it, and that dignity shouldn't be taken away or thrown out, which might be an error of the New Age postmodern movement, that we mm-hmm. want to throw away the left brain, the separation, you know, leadership, etc. We would call it early postmodern, but the more mature postmodern, post-postmodern would transcend and include, so we retain the good side of modernity. You should be individualistic. Once you develop that through evolution, then you cannot throw it away. You cannot lose it, but mm-hmm. you can melt out from the fixation or the rigidity of, you know, being stuck in individual rational mind, and you go beyond separation. So that is exactly the aim of a group practice. Now, what happens that when this melting starts, when this opening starts, then beyond separation comes psychological unity experience. Like, we start to feel that we are very much alike. In rational mind, we think, oh, he's so different and she's so different, I wouldn't talk to her or him unless mm-hmm. we came to this group. But as the process goes on, we discover that we are actually very similar at the level of the soul. Mm-hmm. And we have same emotions, we have similar problems, we feel like brothers and sisters. I would call it like psychological unity. Mm-hmm. And if we immerse in that, if that is already allowed in the room, then a deeper reality opens, a transpersonal unity opens, mm-hmm. that we start to feel that we're actually not just individuals relaxed and meet in an emotional unity, but there is actually an invisible field behind us as individuals, and our being is actually not an individual separated thing, but an indention of a field. Mm-hmm. You see, like we are all part of that field, and that field awareness starts to be prominent and exciting and a new horizon. Mm-hmm. Because even the individual phenomena, like you have an impulse to do something, you might think that impulse is your own impulse. It comes from my brain, it comes from my gut, it comes from mm-hmm. my. But actually, it comes from the field through my gut or mind or heart, mm-hmm. you know, and that becomes can become in this certain stage of consciousness a primary focus, what the field wants to manifest through us, mm-hmm. you know. And if we reach that, this is already a subtle state experience in a group, then we can even more deeply relax into everything. Mm-hmm. And let this intuitive sensing guide or movements or talk or silent interactions or nonverbal ways of being together. And I think this is where the collective consciousness is today. Mm-hmm. This is the new thing that the collective consciousness wants to practice through us. Mm-hmm. You know, in the 60s, 70s, the collective consciousness wanted to practice us to melt out from the rational individualistic self, mm-hmm. to show emotions, to sit in circles, to go to psychological unity, because I think it was preparing us for the next stage that is happening now with this field awareness. And certain schools are expressing this, like Hellinger's constellation work is expressing exactly this. Lalu's Thiel organizations, self-organizing, evolutionary purpose, another articulation of that, viewed through the lenses of organizational life. My integral flow work is another expression of this same kind of starting to use the field phenomena.
Yeah, no, I very much agree, and I very much also like the way how you highlight the field awareness, if we can call it like this, as being a decisive ingredient for this subtle stage of consciousness that you are describing.
Yes.
What I would like to ask you, this field awareness is not necessarily transrational. Because if you look into indigenous cultures, traditional cultures, they are much more aware of their embeddedness in their collective identity as a tribe, for example, or as a mythic collective, or even their embeddedness in the with the forces of nature, the forces of the cosmos. So as much as I agree with you that this awareness of this subtle field is an important step of consciousness, I would like to ask you, how can we discriminate an awareness or a stage of consciousness that is an integral one in the sense that it integrates also our individual rational identity, or a awareness that is aware of the subtlety, but basically is a pre-individual, pre-rational regression of our consciousness?
Yes, that's a very good question. In the, not the pre, but the post-rational consciousness, your individuality becomes like a beautiful color in a colorful palette. So individuality and unity happens at the same time. We can call it a colorful unity. And in a pre-rational, there is not much difference between the individuals. There is not no individual to develop yet. And yet there is a oneness experience. So, let me tell you that in a group process, it's not just simply a post-higher stage group unity. As I said, it can be any stage. For example, you can experience a tribal unity without much individualism in the same workshop. If your soul needs that, what is so beautiful that in a group, exactly that happens to you, what the soul needs, the soul guides. And that's why I'm working so much with the body. You said that I'm a body-oriented therapist or workshopper. Yes, I am, because the soul cannot speak through the language, just in a limited sense. So if you want your deeper self, the soul speak, you need to go to art. And you either paint or write poems, or even deeper, if you shut up and just move it out, show with your body. That's one of the deepest way of connecting with your soul, expressing it, and by that, becoming one with that. Now, if you can do that in a way that your individuality is retained, it's there, it's beautiful, it's and it's put in contact with other refined individuals moved by their soul. And if two people connect in that way, that's an orgy for the soul. And if three or four people put together a whole group, you know, without any guidance, without anyone telling you should step right once and step left two, no, that would be an amber or blue way of group work. You know, but letting it come out freely, then actually, as Lalu would say, a self-organizing appears from the depths of the soul level, and in that individuality is very much there. On the other hand, let me add this: if I organize a spiritual singing circle, because I do, and kirtan chanting, and we chant the mantra, And we are playing the guitar, drumming, chanting, everybody chants that mantra together. That would be a purple experience or amber experience, magenta experience or Wilbur 2 experience, or as we could say, a tribal unity experience. Mm. There is not much individuality expressed, but everybody is in a relaxed out from individuality, relaxed out from rationality, opened up, you know, enabling a oneness experience. But I would dare to say it's not as delicious and delightful as, let's say, a teal experience.
Mm-hmm. There's one part in this differentiation between pre-individuated and post-individuated, if we may call it this way.
Mm-hmm.
Awareness of this field that I find in our work particularly interesting. And I'm very curious if you see something similar in your kind of work, because although we both work with V-spaces, we do it in a very different way. Mm-hmm. You work very body-oriented, and you just said that one of the reasons that you feel that the body can express something that's difficult to express in language.
Yes.
The V-space work that we do with our high V work is very much dialogue focused, is very much language focused, goes out of the same conclusion that you make in a different direction, basically to the point where we feel dialogue has to become a form of art, like high poetry, where the way how we dialogue with each other mm-hmm. is capable of expressing something that is beyond what can be nailed down by language. Language can speak to something
yes.
that is beyond language, but you have to be aware of something beyond language to be able to express something beyond language. So you need a certain consciousness to use language in a different form.
Mm-hmm.
And that's in itself not easy to do, because a language always tries to bring things down to a very either personal-oriented or rational-oriented, lococentric understanding of reality, to put it that way.
Yes.
But what I find very interesting in this kind of V-space work that we do, which I even see as the main difference between pre-individuated forms of collective consciousness and let's call it trans-individuated. That's a better word, because it's not post-individuated, it's trans-individuated forms of consciousness, that in this kind of awareness of the subtle V-space realm, there's something involved that only can be involved by highly individuated people, that individual intention.
Mm-hmm.
Because the example that I find just very intriguing, because it tells so much, is beautiful to be non-separate in a tribal society. But what you usually don't see is there is no way out. You have no choice.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot leave this tribal society. In fact, the form of leaving tribal society was the first form to go beyond tribal consciousness.
Yes.
But in a tribal consciousness, literally, that's really true in a literal form, people die when they're outside of the tribe.
Yes.
So as beautiful as the unity is, there is no freedom involved.
Mm-hmm.
And our capacity of freedom that is very much related to our capacity, to our essence, to our individuation, which I think is really part of what the dignity of modernity is about, that I take responsibility for my choices. And this capacity to take responsibility for my choices needs me as an individual. There is no other place for a responsibility than with me as an individual human being making a choice.
Yes.
And in that, I can make a choice for separation, but... And that's new, I would say. I also can make a choice for this realization of this V-space. And if we do this together, consciously, in a responsible way, make a choice, not just let it happen, let it emerge by itself, but make a choice for this we space. This we space is a new form, freedom-based, because it's based on our free choice to do that. Mm-hmm. And that's a higher form of we space than the tribal form of we space. Would you agree with that perspective? And would you relate this to the kind of work that you are doing?
Yes, completely agree that modernity brought the freedom and the free choice. And that free choice is the entry card to the psychological unity of the trans-individuated states. And that is the entry card to the field awareness. So it's like going into deeper and deeper rooms in the castle, if you wish. Mm-hmm. The deeper and deeper layers of your own self. Mm-hmm. And if we do it together, the deeper and deeper layer of ourselves in the room together, walking that path together, you know. So I agree that in pre-individuate there is no free choice, or free choice is very limited. Mm-hmm. You know, I went to Burma many times to meditate in the Vipassana monasteries, and I observed the village life. Mm-hmm. And what can you have? What are your choices? Everybody has the same thatched roof house from palm leaves, you know. Or even if you have a modern house in the city, it doesn't have furniture, just one or two pieces. So as we would say in Integral, the lower right quadrant, the physical environment mm-hmm. in those societies doesn't afford you choices. And I was born and raised in socialism, mm-hmm. and there was three or four kinds of shit cars that you could buy in the market. You mm-hmm. know, the famous socialist Trabant, Wartburg, Skoda, and this kind of beautiful mm-hmm. vehicles. There was not much choice. So basically your consciousness was trained to not have freedom mm-hmm. or to have a limited freedom. In order to have freedom, you also, and free choices, the society must provide 50 kinds of cars to choose from, you know, 30 types of t-shirt with 10 colors to choose from. So this is how a society's consciousness is creating the physical world, and the physical world is rehypnotizing, recreating the consciousness. Mm. So you need to live in a free Western society to train your mind to actually have chance to make choices, and for your mind it to become a habit to make choices all the time. And that's how you individuate. Mm-hmm. And I observed in America, I also, you know, live half of my life there. Mm-hmm. It's so extremely individuated that it's almost painful from a European perspective, actually. From very early childhood, they ask, I observed how they raise the children, do you want this or do you want that or do you want that? What do you want? So in every second moment, what do you want? Make a choice, make a choice, make a choice. Mm-hmm. This is how they train their children to be very individual and, you know, very skillful in making choices and stand for their rights and express their thinking freely, etc., etc., with all its glorious beauty and dignity, and with all its fixation and shadow of being overly separated, alienated, you know, and picky, narcissist, whatever you want to call it. So, and the challenge is to go beyond that, and there is not a society yet which would train your mind to be trans-individuated. Mm-hmm. That's why we need these laboratoriums, which are actually the workshops, the group V-spaces that we're providing. It's a laboratory for the new consciousness to come out, because it cannot mm-hmm. come out in an ordinary setting of life. That's why we create these spaces and these exercises. And we truly believe that in 100 years or 500 years, what is in the laboratory now will be out on the street as the norm. Mm-hmm.
I want to ask you a question that I guess many people, particularly in integral circles, have asked you already, because you are interested in integral development of consciousness. Yes. You go beyond modern, postmodern consciousness. Mm-hmm. At the same time, you are working quite openly, mm-hmm. let's call it, with shamanic traditions. Mm-hmm. So I guess you must have been asked by people, how can you work with shamanic traditions that directly come from a very early consciousness in order to create circumstances, as you just described, a laboratory to develop postmodern forms of consciousness. Why are you using so regressive methods like drumming the shaman's drum?
Oh, that's cute.
To do that, this doesn't make any sense. Just to give you my perspective on that,
okay.
And I'm interested if you see it in a similar way. I would say that I'm very in favor of our process of individuation. I think it's the process of individuation, and you can really, if you look at the history of human consciousness in the last 5,000 years, one of the main lines of development that you can describe there is the process of individuation. Again, particular in the European Western context, but not only. And I think this is a good thing. But at the same time, I would say there are shadow sides to this development. The shadow sides of the development and our forms of alienation from ourselves, alienation from nature, alienation from the sacred, is something that seems to be for many people quite obvious right now. And there are still around tribal societies that have not gone through the same process of individuation. And I don't want to make them, heroize them as they are the solution. But at the same time, to see that although there are certain things of development that I find very favorable, they haven't gone through, they also have not gone through the same process of alienation. So there is, even if you see it in a kind of progressive developmental point of view, a lot to learn from these cultures, these indigenous shamanistic cultures, their relationship to the sacred, their relationship also to the spirits, their relationship to their body, and their relationship to the understanding of what it means to be human, to integrate it, not to go back to this kind of consciousness, but to integrate it to a higher form of consciousness that can hold all of that. Would you see that in a similar way?
Yeah, well, I think, first of all, I love your question, because you ask something that is not often but rarely asked, but maybe many people think about that. And no, shamanic work is not a pre-individuated tribal thing. Mm-hmm. It's true that the shamanic cultures traditionally are on that stage or state. Mm-hmm. But the shamanic capacities, like intuitively immediately knowing what to do, and when you do it, it's perfect for the whole room. You know, kind of reading the field, that's that's completely not, early tribal. Mm-hmm. A universal spiritual capacity that at any era, you know, certain people used to have and have now and will always have. Actually, in Wilbur's stage model, we would call it psychic and subtle. If you talk in stage language, if you call in state language, if you call in stage language, you would call it level 7 or level 8. Mm-hmm. You know, so these are spiritual capacities, and a rational individuated person can have those capacities. A pre-individuated person in a tribal era can have those capacities, and a postmodern, you know, person and practitioner can also have those capacities. So we differentiate the stage of development in the personality, mm-hmm. of which a culture is an expression of, and the states of spiritual spiritual consciousness states, mm-hmm. you know, that are independent from the personality's developmental stage and can come online at any stage. That's why it's so interesting. Actually, in Wilbur's work, it's called the Wilbur Combs Lattice. Mm-hmm. So I'm not interested in early tribal, those early tribal practices which express childhood magical thinking. Mm-hmm. But when I actually go into a state where automatically psychic capacities start to happen through me, mm-hmm. then I simply enact them, use them, live mm-hmm. them with a trans-individuated post-modern, et cetera, et cetera, mindset in the service of those we spaces.
Mm. No,
does that make sense?
It makes sense. And I understand where you're going with this. Isn't that what you're describing already a process of a form of integration of different forms of consciousness? Because one has to admit, we, including you, learned it from shamanic cultures. That's where the name even comes from. Mm-hmm. And I haven't seen any drumming in a Catholic church. I haven't seen any drumming in any modernist rational philosophy club either. We got the drums from the societies that still have these practices from the shamanic magical background. I completely agree with you that you don't have to regress to a purely magic consciousness in that, that you can use it in this strange individual way that you're describing. Mm-hmm. But don't we have to also honor that in this case, it are the shamanic cultures who teaches us to do that. Yes. Because look, for example, you talked about the subtle consciousness and intuition. There's an intuition that the Aborigines have in Australia of sensing, for example, water 1,000 kilometers, maybe not 1,000, but hundreds of kilometers away, or being aware of things that rational are just don't make sense, but are proven to be correct. Mm-hmm. So they have access in their consciousness to something that we don't have anymore. At least usually we don't have anymore. Maybe some have, maybe you have. So there's something they can teach us that does not say that we have to go back to the magical state of consciousness, but we also have to see that we have to and we can learn from everyone and also the indigenous cultures.
Totally agree. So much so that I myself did so. And I also learned from a Burmese Buddhist monastery, which is the bluest, amberest place you can ever imagine. Mm-hmm. Like, or in ordinary terms, it's a very much regulated monastic setting. It's not a free Western express yourself space or not a post-modern space. It's a pre-modern space. But to go deep in your silent meditation of observing your mind, that solid, structured, rural, you know, behavior world helps you much more than a rational do whatever you want kind of collective. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
It's, to train your mind deeply, you need practice and repeat and repeat and repeat, and you need order, etc., etc. It serves much better, the meditation, at least did for me, than being just a new age practitioner, which when I feel I meditate, when I don't feel I don't meditate. So self-discipline, I learned it much in the East, and I also learned faith, deeper faith, and bowing down, you know, it's such a beautiful practice of letting go of the ego and open the heart, show respect. And so this is beautiful, you know, this really charged up my practice and accelerated my spiritual, you know, deepening. But it doesn't mean that I also brought back from Burma the authoritarian suppressive system that comes with the same stage of consciousness of control, order, rules, roles. So it serves meditation, yes, but it doesn't serve human relationships. A much advanced human relationship is when we let each other think freely, you know, walk around freely and dress to express our individuality instead of wearing uniforms in the totalitarian culture. So this is how we differentiate the stage of development as a personality thing, as an egoic thing, and the spiritual content that can be reached through that system, and the spiritual content, which is, by the way, free of any of these stages. It's in itself. And in certain cultures, you can learn certain modalities of spirituality, universal spirituality best. So in shamanic culture, you can learn really good intuitive sensing. And I think that consciousness is a field. It's not just the product of the brain, but actually around your body, you walk around with a bubble, the aura, or call it however you like, but there is a field. So when you stand next to a person who is doing something, this consciousness will merge with your consciousness field. That's why we can learn capacities from people, not from books.
Well, That leads me to a question that I also would like to ask you, because you several times came back now to your Burma experience, meditating in a monastery. In the work that you're doing, body flow, which is very related to collective consciousness, to body awareness, to sensing, to subtle energies, why do you need for what you're doing meditation? And what did you learn in this Burma Buddhist context for this?
Oh, when you learn in Burma Buddhist context or any Vipassana retreat, you learn to simply put it, to shut up, you know, your mind, or to quiet your mind as much as possible. And boy, it's very deep in a monastery where hundreds of people are meditating for years and decades, you know, monks. When you sit in that room, boom, it pulls you in. In an instance, you still struggle with your thoughts, etc., but it's such a strong container, such a deepened space, that it's like an accelerated muscle building in a training camp. So, so what I build is presence, silence. When your mind is silent, the more your mind is silent, the more you are in the here and now. The more you are in the here and now, the more your subtle sensing opens up naturally. See? So actually carrying such a consciousness in a postmodern workshop space, or we call it in a psychotherapeutical group space, adds a whole new spiritual dimensions, and my consciousness triggers the consciousness of other people. Like I got it from others, you know, in the monasteries, I pass it on. And even if we don't sit formally, that now let's do a 20-minute sitting, everybody, I let them go into a movement exercise and I put music. But with my consciousness, I'm able to basically restructure the field, the room, and people pick it up. And it's like wildfire. People have it, actually. They just need permission and they just need a trigger. You know? So like a wildfire, it builds up a mutual field, collective field.
Isn't it the case that the same way we can learn, let's call it subtle consciousness, from tribal purple cultures, that there's something that we can learn from, let's call them mythic cultures. Basically, what we are talking about are the religious breakthrough experiences in the Axial Ages.
Yes,
happened in very different cultural forms, but also in a very interesting way connected with Lao Tzu in China, with about Gautama Buddha or others in the Indian subcontinent, with in the Mediterranean Elias, with the discovery of the God that you cannot name, with Platon, where I would say in this Axial Age, the interesting enough was also the age where the individual got one of its breakthrough birth experiences. That in this Axial Age, there was a breakthrough to the what one could call, you can call it Nirvana, God, whatever, but it's a breakthrough to something that is transcendent, that is absolute. In the sense that it's not related to anything, and it's there's a freedom in this. That this experience is something, not just experience, this realization is something that also we in our modern, postmodern, rational, secular culture highly can, it helps us to free us from ourselves, to be able to relate to this. Let's call it in the Buddhist context, emptiness.
Yes, exactly. And yes?
I just wanted to bring this in. As we learn this subtle energy from the indigenous cultures, we learn this from the mythic cultures of the high religion. We learn also the rationality individual from our modern context. And right now we seem to be at a transition point where we have to find a way to integrate all of that.
Yes.
Is that the basic of your integral understanding?
Totally. I mean, it's full alignment with my integral understanding and that of Wilber's, you know, stages. Actually, it's not Wilber's. He just, you know, collects these of other people and puts the perspective that you are naming, that with an integral awareness, we understand that what came with the mythic religions and within that, the meditative traditions, you know, brought us to the nirvana, emptiness, universal, formless spirit self, if you wish. And that's the great background or the great field in which phenomena and things arise.
Right.
You know, and when phenomena and things arise in the depths of the mind, that's what we usually call soul.
Mm-hmm.
You know, something is moving, something wants to manifest.
Mm-hmm.
You know, impulses are coming. And even a more constricted, smaller part in the foreground of the self is the rational mind.
Mm-hmm.
So if you come out from the depths, it's universal consciousness. Within that, you know, soul, and within that, coming out is rational mind. So rational mind is kind of the peak of the whole whole structure.
Yeah.
But if you are going back from outside of yourself to the innermost part of yourself, then exactly these are the layers that you have to go through: your mind, your soul, and then your spirit, the universal self.
As a last question, also because we are coming to the end of our time, if you describe these different layers of consciousness as you were describing it right now, and basically as we were talking about right now, could one say that if one goes along with what I meant before, that a big part of our history of consciousness can be seen as a form of individuation to our highly individuated self-sense in modernity, and which we haven't gone too much or not at all into, but I think we don't have the time, this pluralistic understanding of the same individuality in a postmodern culture. Could it be that right now this process of individuation is in a kind of a turning point, that it is kind of going beyond itself? Not in a way that it's losing itself, but it's finding wholeness again in a way where individuation is very much a finding of singularity, of my single individuality. But right now, and I see this one of the virtues of these new forms of free space practices, as your practice is one form of, is our practice is one form of, where there are people interested to go beyond the just isolated eye sense and understand and see and sense that wholeness is a deeper reality, a separation. That this is something where maybe the process of evolution is going right now, that we highly individual people understand that even our individuality happens in a wholeness that is maybe an undivided whole of the cosmic development, if you want to call it this way.
Yes. Yes, that's what I was referring to, I think, as the multicolor unity.
Mm-hmm.
That with our individualities, retaining, having an individuality, but having it loosened up, you know, easy, relaxed individuality.
Mm-hmm.
We are connected in a unity, in a wholeness. And I agree that that's the new consciousness that you cannot stop. It's just coming through, you know, through all the cracks of society. Facebook is actually training us to be that. Like in just a few, you know, years, we got used to be globally connected, you know, and having so many friends, even if they are not real friends, but connections. But still, the sense is building up that it becomes natural and everyday reality that we are globally connected. And I think it's just the beginning with Facebook. It's what we experience in the group work and WeSpace is way more ecstatic experience of unity and wholeness that hopefully will come up in the fibers of society in the next decades.
Benze, I would like to use this also as our last point.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much for coming to this first English Radio Evolve broadcast. Can you just before we say goodbye also tell people your website where people can see more of your work?
Yes, and thank you so much for inviting me. And the website that I want you to go is integraleuropeanconference.com. And there you can, that's the big thing that's coming up in May 22nd to 27th. So please come and experience a lot of this WeSpace that we are talking about. There'll be a whole section devoted of workshops and hundreds of people practicing together WeSpace higher stage practices. So come there, and also you can check out on that webpage my personal profile in the team menu if you want to see my personal webpage, bensaganti.com, and other webpages related.
Thank you very much, Bense. Thank you, everyone, for listening, listening live, for listening this as broadcast. The next English edition of Radio Evolve will come again in 2 weeks. Next week, we have our German edition, and on our website, One World in Dialogue, you will find the next programs ongoingly, and you can sign up for a newsletter if you're interested to be informed about Radio Evolve International. Thank you very much.